Have you ever wondered how Charlotte's crown logo came to be or how the Queen City became a banking city? Vote for one of those questions and WFAE will answer it in an upcoming episode of the FAQ City Podcast. Find the podcast and cast your vote now by going to WFAE.org/FAQ City. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte is approaching its 250th anniversary. Our namesake, Queen Sophia Charlotte of Mecklenburg-Strelitz, Germany, would have been 24 years older. She became the wife of Britain's King George III and was the Queen of Britain and Ireland for 57 years, beginning in 1761. For part of that time, she ruled over the colonies, and when Charlottetown came to be in 1768, we named ourselves after the Queen and the county after her homeland, probably to curry favor. So who was this woman? What should we know about her? And did we choose a worthy person to pin the name of this city on? Dr. Stephanie Myers undoubtedly has the answers to those and many other questions about this fascinating woman. She's the author of Invisible Queen, Mixed Ancestry Revealed, Queen Sophia Charlotte. And right there in the title is one of the tantalizing tidbits you're about to learn. Dr. Myers joins us by phone from Washington, D.C. Welcome to the program.
Well, welcome, Mike, and thank you very much for inviting me to be on your show this morning. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. I should mention that Dr. Myers will be having a book signing and a lecture on Saturday of this week at the Charlotte Museum of History. You are a native Californian, an author, a scriptwriter, film producer. You've served as a presidential appointee at several agencies, including the Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Transportation. How did you come to write a book about Queen Charlotte? How did she even pop into your consciousness?
Well, that's a really great question, because I really had no intention of writing a history book. That's not my background and hadn't been my interest. But I am fascinated with genealogy and family history. So my husband and I were researching our families one evening on the internet, as many people do. We were just kind of punching on different websites and looking at things. And we happened to be looking into German heritage. And we ran across a website that featured this picture of Queen Sophia Charlotte. And I looked at the picture and I thought, gee, she kind of looks like some people I know. It was very obvious from her portrait that had she lived in America, she would have been classified as an African-American. So being a black woman myself, I found it fascinating. And so I spent 3 years getting books and running to libraries and looking all through the internet and decided to write a story about her.
So there's been all this to-do about Prince Harry's fiancée, Meghan Markle, and her impending marriage to the prince, because she's an American commoner, but also because she is of mixed race. And everyone is rushing to say it's a first. Clearly, at least according to your book and a lot of the research that went into it, that's not true. Would this be a surprise? Is this acknowledged by the royal family?
It hasn't been acknowledged in a formal way. Now, they have pictures and portraits of Queen Charlotte around Buckingham Palace and the various places in England, but no, it has not come up. And Meghan is from my hometown, Los Angeles, which you mentioned, so we're all very fascinated with it. But there were many people of African and Moorish descent in royal families throughout Europe. This is really a story that has yet to really be fully told, because people of African descent have been all over the world and have been in various capacities. Not all black people from Africa were enslaved, for heaven's sakes. We had a nation of Africa that had kings and queens. We had people in royal families. In Queen Sophia Charlotte's case, her mother, whose name was Elizabeth Albertina, was descended through her matrilineal line from a king of Portugal. And this particular king, Alphonse, was ruling in Portugal, and he had a wife and a family. But like many kings, he conquered some villages in Africa, and he had black African people as a part of his household. And Elizabeth Albertina, her great-great-great-great-great-grandmother, was one of them. So the king had a woman, as they would say, a concubine, who was black, and this became the ancestor of Queen Sophia Charlotte. And the genealogy was handed down the line.
So she was the Queen Charlotte was the eighth of 10 children, if I'm not mistaken, born to Duke Charles Louis Frederick and his wife, the Duchess Elizabeth Albertina of Germany. So that means all of her siblings also have, the whole line has African blood running through it.
Absolutely. And when you look in our book, you'll see a picture of her brother, and you can see it in his face. He has black heritage. And so it's yes, it was handed down through the family. We have a picture of Duchess Albertina, and you can see in her face. Now, we're not saying that these people were dark brown-skinned people, chocolate brown. I'm a chocolate brown-skinned woman and proud of it. They were fair, as we would say in America, mulatto. But we must remember that in America, one drop of African blood could cause a person of color to be enslaved. So it is not something that we can just brush off. If Queen Sophia Charlotte had lived in America during the period of slavery, she could have easily been part of the many, many hundreds of thousands, millions of people who found themselves in that position. So it's important that as Americans and that as human beings, we celebrate the heritage of all of us. And I must say that the fact that she had mixed race is only one element of Queen Sophia Charlotte. What was more fabulous about her that everyone can take pride in is she was such an educated,
right,
insightful, visionary woman.
And we're going to talk we're going to talk about all that. But I want to get to the bottom of this, because this, I don't think people don't know this. And you say that you were doing some research on the internet and you ran across a picture. And of course, the pictures are all portraits. They are not photographs, because that didn't come along for another 150 years, or another 100 years at least. So they're all paintings. And I've looked at several pictures over the years of Queen Charlotte, because we're surrounded by her here. And it never occurred to me that there were any African characteristics in her face. And perhaps that's because of what Frontline, the PBS program, revealed. One of their guests mentioned that her contemporaries said her features gave her an unmistakable African appearance, but when you look at portraits and features, they're hard to detect because artists of that period were, this is according to Frontline, expected to play down or soften or even obliterate, quote, undesirable features in a subject's face. So would this have been well known at the time?
Well, I don't think so. I think that Elizabeth Albertina and her heritage was so strong that when they selected Charlotte to marry King George III, they did it because she was smart. She was one of the smarter girls of her time. But they did whiten her portrait. There's no question about that. But when you look at some of the portraits done by Joshua Reynolds and some of the famous portrait artists, look at her hair. Now, for black women, the hair tells the story. We know that people who have, you know, curly, and of course, these days, everybody's trying to get their hair curly or kinky like our hair. We know that black women can look at the hair. And she was also described by people in the court as having a thick nose. One of the physicians at the court said she had a true mulatto face. That was his way of describing it. Various little comments were said in the court that she had a thick nose or she had thick lips. And this is in some of the literature. And that's what fascinated me when I was researching her, that these comments were made. But there is no question that during the Atlantic slave trade, England, the leaders of England, wanted to whiten up the queen because they knew that black people from Africa were being enslaved in the West Indies and in America. And it was a little awkward to have a queen at the same time that this was going on with black heritage. So, yes, it was, as we would say in modern terms, a cover-up.
Yeah. Charlotte was 17 when she met and married King George III, who was 23. And when she arrived at the court, you described that first meeting as awkward, I guess, as any meeting like that would be. And George and members of the court were surprised by her appearance. They didn't know before this marriage was arranged that she had mulatto characteristics. That was what surprised them?
Well, I think that King George's mother, the Dowager Augusta, would have known, and he may have known, but he was young. It might have still been a surprise once she got there. But yes, a delegation went to visit Charlotte and her mother and family before she was selected to marry King George III. And that delegation would have certainly sent the word back that she had mixed heritage. I have to believe that. But they do say that when she arrived, perhaps King George III and his mom and the Colonel Gramet, who was very close to the family, they knew. But the others in the court, I'm sure they were quite surprised. They didn't tell anyone, or they didn't have TV and radio to tell the story. But they say that King George went for Queen Charlotte right away, that he was impressed, he liked her, and they got married, like, within, you know, the first 24, 48 hours.
Yes, I'm curious as to whether that's because he fell for her head over heels, as Queen Victoria allegedly did for Albert, or was it that her mother didn't want him to back out of this, and so within 24 hours, they were married. They were married in a private ceremony in a chapel, I think, at King James Court, and not in the big cathedral as you would have it on television today. Was there a reason for the urgency for these nuptials?
Well, there's a second story that's a hidden story that may have contributed to the urgency, and that is that there was a Quaker girl that King George III was allegedly having a romance with. And there was just this story, it's in the literature, that he was with this Quaker girl and may have even had a child or two. So it depends on which version of the story you want to believe. His mother, Dowager Augusta, wanted King George III to inherit the throne. And so she put a lot of urgency into getting him married. I kind of feel that King George III was, you know, a little, I guess in contemporary terms, we might call him kind of a wild child, or he had some personality issues that were a little hard to manage. But whether it was the Quaker girlfriend, or whether it was that they wanted him to be married in such a way that he could inherit the throne, the marriage took place. And King George III and Queen Sophia Charlotte were married for 60 years. There was no rumor of any infidelity. All the records show that they had a very close relationship and had the 15 children and really had a solid marriage. So I believe that whatever the circumstances were that led to them meeting, once they met, it worked, and they went on to have a royal family.
So I have about a minute left in this segment, and we've already mentioned that her facial features that some have described as conspicuously Negroid, that's a quote, were toned down in a lot of these portraits, and her skin was whitened, etc. But you go on to say that in the Frontline story, they claimed it's no wonder that the black community, both in this country and throughout the British Commonwealth, rallied around pictures of Queen Charlotte for generations. But if they played this down, how did they recognize it? How did they know?
I think there were two sets of pictures. I think there were certain portrait artists who portrayed her as she was. Because there's quite a story about her portraits being copied and brought into Virginia by Lord Dunmore, who was the first governor of Virginia, and shown to enslaved people on plantations, and that those pictures were used to convince them that King George was on their side, and people ran away from the plantation, ran away from slavery up to Canada, and the British provided them free transportation on British ships.
And in fact, there was a move afoot at one point during the war for slaves to be encouraged to join the British Army for their freedom. We're going to come right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Queen Charlotte, Queen Sophia Charlotte of Great Britain, because we are approaching the 250th anniversary of Charlotte, which, of course, is named after the Queen. We'll get into exactly who decided that and why in a moment. And we're talking about this with Dr. Stephanie Myers, who's the author of Invisible Queen, Mixed Ancestry Revealed, Queen Sophia Charlotte, in which it is revealed, I think for many this is a surprise, that she had, the Queen had, African lineage. I don't think that that's a well-known fact, particularly in light of the fact that Prince Harry's fiancée, much is being said about her lineage today. Let's bring some other folks into this conversation about Queen Charlotte. Dr. Hugh Dussek is a history instructor at CPCC, where he teaches, among other things, American and Charlotte history. Thank you for joining us.
Sure.
And you are from London.
Yes, indeed.
The mother country.
That's right, yes, from Bromley in southeast London.
And Adria Vogt is president and CEO of the Charlotte Museum of History. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having us this morning.
You're very welcome. Let's go back to this very speedy wedding that took place we were talking about a minute ago, because literally the 17-year-old princess and the 23-year-old King of England met, and the next day they were married, and 2 weeks later they had the coronation ceremony for the relatively new king and his bride, the queen. Hmm. Why the rush?
Well, I think one reason was because the king was very anxious. They'd already planned the coronation for September the 22nd, 1761, and he wanted to be crowned together with his queen. So he was very anxious to have this happen. And apart from
this was not like getting on an airliner and hopping across the pond to meet and marry your intended. There, a lot of things could have happened on the voyage, on the trip from Germany to England. So why not? Why didn't he meet her months before, a year before? Why?
Well, there was also there were several other candidates that had to marry somebody who was not a Roman Catholic and also was a Protestant German princess. This was partly because of the requirements of the as being the King of Great Britain and Ireland, and also as he was the Elector of Hanover. He was still had connections to Germany. So it was necessary that he married a Protestant princess from Germany. Mm-hmm. There were several, but he sent round a person called Baron Munchausen, actually, who went round. It has nothing to do with Terry Gilliam. This is another Baron Munchausen altogether. And he went round and ran the various courts of North Germany and looking for suitable candidates. And Princess Sophia Charlotte was on the list and turned out to be one of the ones that he put forward as being the most viable candidate.
This always fascinates me because you see these stories on television. If you watch PBS and all these period dramas about Queen Victoria and about the current queen, you know how these marriages are arranged, perhaps more clearly than you might have just sitting in a history class where you were kind of not paying attention. And it fascinates me that these very prominent people whose importance cannot be overstated in the time period would pair up on the just because of money or family or relationships with no real understanding of who each other were, and you had, as a result of this, but not in King George's case, evidently, a lot of mistresses and concubines and things like that. Why did they do it that way? Why didn't these royal families socialize, get to know one another, and then see what happens?
Well, I guess there was a procedure, a practice that they had to follow at the time. Okay. That was the way it was.
Were either of you surprised? I know you're having Dr. Myers to speak at the Charlotte Museum of History, but were you at all surprised by the revelation that Queen Charlotte had African heritage?
I was surprised by a lot of the facts that I learned about Queen Charlotte since engaging with Dr. Myers and reading this book. You know, her ancestry, I think there had been sort of hints of it, but no one had really delved into this history. And no, I don't think it's a fact that many people know. And when race is such a dividing factor for the city of Charlotte as it is today, I think it's a symbol that we can all rally behind. She was a well-educated woman. She was talented. She was really an activist. And I think that was a piece of her history that I was not aware of that made her appealing to King George.
I know this didn't surprise you, Dr. Dussek, but is this well known in Britain? Do people talk about it? Is it even a factor in Britain? Does the royal family discuss it?
I don't know about that. I'm not sure about in Britain. I have been aware of this, and we've heard this. People would often, when I was giving tours at the museum, people would comment on this. And back in 2011, we had over at the Charlotte Museum, Friederike Drinkuth, who is a scholar, German scholar, and a curator of some of the castles in Germany, at least one of them, where Sophia Charlotte grew up. And we, when she came and spoke here in Charlotte back then, we asked her very specifically about this question. She's an expert on Queen Charlotte, and she didn't say yes, and she didn't say no. Mm. And I noticed that in her book too. She pointed out that it is a strong possibility. So yes, this
would it have surprised Adolf? And I ask that because if Duchess Elizabeth Albertina of Germany came from the line of Portuguese royal family, and they had dalliances with people from Africa, that kind of spoils Adolf Hitler's Aryan nation theory, doesn't it?
Well, there we are.
So, before we talk about Queen Charlotte some more, let's talk about who decided and why it was decided that Charlottetown, as it was called Charlotte. Why did they choose her, Adria? What do you know?
Well, I think it's, as Hugh and I were discussing as we were preparing for this lecture, a lot of that why is not written down anywhere. So we have to speculate. And a lot of cities were being named after loyalist connections, or a lot of loyalist connections of namings of institutions in Charlotte, road names, Queen's College, for instance, Tryon Street, a lot of these references to loyalist connections. So that was not uncommon at the time. But it was also likely to have been a direct attempt to curry favor with the crown at a time when that was still very important, when you needed things like a strong location for a courthouse, for instance, for your new county.
So I just got my calculator ready. This was 1768 that we requested the name Charlotte, and that was prior to the Revolutionary War. And you mentioned loyalists, and I guess there was some division of loyalty here among certain people, but not so much here, right?
Well, we're talking about the 1760s, and at that time, this community, the Scots-Irish who were living here, and the Germans were, it appears, trying their very best to be loyal to the crown. This was a way to gain advantages. This was the game to play at the time. Mm-hmm. And so calling the county Mecklenburg County in honor of the birthplace of Queen Charlotte, calling the town Charlottetown, calling their college, their Presbyterian college, Queen's College, and calling the main street just up here, Tryon Street, after Governor William Tryon, the British governor. These were all part of ways of ensuring that they got the advantages that came through the crown.
And did the crown notice? Were they even aware that this tiny little speck on the face of the earth, because it was 360 acres, that's all it was. Mm. So were they even aware that they had chosen the name Charlotte and Mecklenburg for the county?
I'm not sure about that. Certainly Governor Tryon would have been, and he did at some points communicate to his superiors about what was going on here.
So what would the advantages have been unless King George and Queen Charlotte knew that they had bestowed this honor upon them by naming our little dirt patch after the queen?
Mike, I'd like to interject here also, okay. If I may. I ran across an interesting tidbit in the research that when Charlotte came from Germany to England, she was on a yacht that was, the captain's name was Lord Anson, A-N-S-O-N. And Lord Anson was Admiral of the Royal Navy, and he had visited the Carolinas in the 1750s. So it's really ironic that the county of Mecklenburg was kind of carved out of the county of Anson, and Charlotte and Charlottetown were part of this area. Well, the captain, Lord Anson, he was impressed with Charlotte because there was a terrible storm when they came from across the river and across the ocean over to London to get to England, and Charlotte sang to them. Adria was talking about her talents. Well, she was a talented musician, and she took her harpsichord, and she sang to the crew and to the guests who were on the yacht with her and Lord Anson. So kind of it may have been that they developed an affection for her, or Lord Anson may have shared the knowledge of this marriage to King George with the Carolina people, through the Scots-Irish and the British who were settled there. May have just been some, a positive feeling.
Did we benefit in any way through this? If we were currying favor and hoping to get some of the benefits that come with this honor of naming a town after the Queen, did anything come of it? Did we get anything out of it? Because there was a short period thereafter from 1768 before 1776. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a lot of time. 8 years, I think.
Well, one important point was to make sure that you did get Charlotte located where it is. After all, Mecklenburg County at that time was bigger. It included parts of Cabarrus County, and there were moves afoot to try to get the county courthouse up there rather than where it is here. So you wanted to make sure that you were got everything straight with the governor, that the governor was on your side. So perhaps naming things would be part of that. And so that would be one advantage, because if it's where you have it now, then you can sell plots of land and you can make money. And you also have offices such as Justice of the Peace. There are various ways you can be part of the governing elite, which would be through the British system.
Because if you go to the Charlotte Museum of History, you have for lack of a better term, you can correct me if I'm wrong, a diorama, essentially, of what Charlotte looked like.
We do.
At its founding. And it is not impressive. I mean, your diorama is impressive, but Charlotte.
That's one of the things I was thinking about. Everybody refers to the George Washington quote, the trifling place.
Yes.
This was 23, I suppose, years before we were even a trifling place. So really, this is a very nascent area. And it's worth mentioning that Mecklenburg, the name Mecklenburg, came before the name Charlotte. And one of the things that we may have gotten was, in fact, the forming of the county, because the people of what was then Anson County had to lobby to the governor to separate into two separate counties.
And why would they want to do that?
So that they wouldn't have to travel so far by horse to get to the places where they would need to be legally involved.
And the reason, I believe, that we have 100 counties in North Carolina ultimately is that you had to be within, a one-day's ride of the courthouse by horse. So that's why you had to break the state up into so many little areas. Let's get back to this aspect of multiracialism here, because she was and he was the king. They were both abolitionists, Stephanie Myers. When we hear the term Emancipation Proclamation, we immediately think of Abraham Lincoln, who issued the Emancipation Proclamation as kind of a wedge to get the southern states to come back in. If you don't come back to the Union by such and such a time, we're going to free your slaves by proclamation. Well, the King George, issued an Emancipation Proclamation 90 years before Abraham Lincoln did, in 1774. Why did he do that?
Yes, he did. And he issued that Emancipation Proclamation to try to attract people who were enslaved on plantations in the colonies to run away up to Canada so that they could be free. And yes, Queen Sophia Charlotte and King George were against slavery. She in particular took a stand against slavery with some of the abolitionists of the time. And you had mentioned about the different pictures of her. And in our book, Invisible Queen, on page 45, if people get a copy of the book, which they can get over Myers Publishing.com, www.myerspublishing.com. It's not available on Amazon, but there's a cartoon that was drawn of her in 1792 by an artist that portrays her as clearly with Negroid features. 1792. So yes, Lord Dunmore and King George issued this proclamation to offer freedom to the black people who were enslaved on the plantations, and they were offering them an opportunity to become free. This was going on during the American Revolutionary time. So they were trying to entice the enslaved people to join the British Army to fight the slave owners.
So he used this exactly the way Abraham Lincoln tried to use it. Was Lincoln aware of this Emancipation Proclamation, do you think? Or was it a new idea? I'm sure he was.
I would defer to Dr. Desick, but I'm sure that he was because it's a matter of history.
Do you know, Doctor?
And yes, Lincoln would have known that.
I don't know about that, but I do know that the abolitionist movement was a powerful force in Britain. William Wilberforce, for instance, I think he's one of my favorite characters in history. William Wilberforce persevered for many years to ban the slave trade, to stop the slave trade, and we finally did that in 1807, and Alauda Equiano, a well-known African who had been enslaved and had gained his freedom and gone on speaking tours in Britain, he wrote a petition to Queen Charlotte. I think, Dr. Myers, do you know about that? I'm sure you do.
Yes, absolutely. He wrote the petition to her, and I wish we could have found records that they had ever met. I believe that the Queen probably did meet Alauda Equiano. He became very famous because he wrote a best-selling book calling for outlawing slavery. So, yes, William Wilberforce, Granville Sharp, Alauda Equiano, these were loud voices of abolitionism, and Queen Charlotte was friends with them and supported them. And she actively supported the British Parliament, bringing an end to the slave trade in 1808. And it was just great to see that she was able to be alive when the Parliament ended slavery in England in 1808.
Was that desire to end slavery in England and ultimately in the United States, was that tied to her lineage, or was it simply an extension of what you describe in the book as her social consciousness and genuine concern for the welfare of others?
Oh, I believe it was related to her consciousness and welfare for others. And I can't credit her with slavery being ended in England. I mean, Granville Sharp and William Wilberforce, it really goes to them who were the leading voices. But certainly it happened during the same time. And I believe that the Queen operated behind the scenes the way effective women do who are wives of powerful men.
We have to take a break. We're going to come back with more on Queen Charlotte and some of the other aspects of her personality and her talents that have been alluded to when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Invisible Queen. That would be Queen Charlotte, whose name we have here in Charlotte, because in 1768, the founding fathers decided to ask the royal. Who did they ask, by the way? If we could do the governor, if we could be named Charlotte? Is that what happened?
Now, that is a question also we discussed before we came on the air, how exactly that worked. Whether they asked it from here or whether it was decided by the governor and the legislature. And I think the answer to that is certainly they acquiesced to it, they agreed to it, and it does appear that they had these other aspects of loyalism around the community, the Queen's College, calling the Main Street Tryon Street. So whether they requested that it be called Mecklenburg County and then the town Charlotte, or whether it was something that was handed down from the governor's office, that's a good question.
That's the voice of Dr. Hugh Dussek. He's a history instructor at CPCC, and Adria Focht is here. She is president and CEO of the Charlotte Museum of History, and we're talking about Queen Charlotte because we're approaching the 250th anniversary of Charlotte, the city. And Dr. Stephanie Myers has written a book about the Queen, Invisible Queen, Mixed Ancestry, Revealed, Queen Sophia Charlotte, Queen of Britain and Ireland, 1761 to 1818. Let's go through some of the other aspects, Dr. Myers, of her personality and her talents, because several people have alluded to here, she was educated, well-educated, which was not necessarily the case with women at the time, and she was talented. She also was acquainted with Johann Sebastian Bach, and was an early patron of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Did that take place because of her being raised in Germany, or did that happen after she became the Queen of England?
It happened after she became Queen of England, but because she was raised in Mecklenburg County and in Germany, she went to school, she spoke four languages, She was quite a reader, and she was truly educated. And this is something important for our young girls and young boys to do, become really educated. She read widely. She even read a book on Voltaire and decided she didn't like Voltaire. I mean, she was really quite amazing. And so when she became queen, within about 2 years, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's family brought him to the palace and brought him there to play for her. And so she was in Buckingham Palace. King George, by the way, purchased Buckingham Palace for Queen Sophia Charlotte. And so he came to Buckingham Palace and performed for her. And because she was so talented, she was able to recognize his talent, and she groomed him, patronized him. And so Mozart, the great composer today, got his career started because of her.
And let's be clear, the Mozart family toured the young prodigy, and he was a prodigy all over the world at a very young age. How old was he when he met the queen?
8 years old.
There you go.
8 years old.
And she played harpsichord.
Yes, she played the harpsichord. She got it when she was a little girl. Her father, the Duke, they had a family ensemble of musicians. And so when she became the queen, she and King George would have an ensemble. And just an interesting anecdote, Granville Sharp, one of the great abolitionists, used to play in a musical ensemble with them. So this was another indication that she was friends with the abolitionists.
She was also... Go ahead, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
The queen also, we can't go too far in the show without talking about the fact she gave birth to 15 children, because this was a big part of her life.
Yes, and yes, I would say so. And she was none too pleased about it, because you have a quote in the book, I think it's in your book. She writes, "I don't think a prisoner could wish more ardently for his liberty than I wish to be rid of my burden and see the end of my campaign. I would be happy if I knew this was the last time." Well, that quote was on the at the time of the birth of her 14th child, so it was not going to be her last time. But the 14th child was...
That quote is not in our book.
Okay.
I want to clarify that.
Okay.
That quote is not in our book.
Well, I found it someplace. I do all kinds of stuff. I found it someplace else. But Prince Alfred was that 14th child, and he died very young after receiving an inoculation against smallpox. I didn't know that inoculations had come about until Louis Pasteur, which is far longer. But the queen had studied up on the science of inoculations, decided she believed it, and had her children inoculated. He did not survive the inoculation. Did he die of smallpox because of the inoculation or something else?
Well, there were two children, actually, who died from the side effects of the smallpox, Prince Albert and Prince Octavius. But this gives you more insight into how intelligent this woman was. She met the doctor, Dr. Edward Jenner, who was the scientist who had learned about smallpox being raised in a dairy country environment. And he believed and had heard out in the country where he was raised that the smallpox vaccine could prevent the disease. So here she had the nerve and the audacity to inoculate 15 children, and only two of them died. Now, it's a tragedy that those two died. However, the 13 survived, and I think that her ability to understand science at that time. She also loved astronomy. She and King George had a telescope and were looking at the stars and very interested in astronomy. And she was also responsible for the first woman to go on the payroll of the government, who was a young woman who was an astronomer. And she became, she named a comet after Charlotte. So she had many dimensions to her. Botany is another dimension. King George's mother, the Dowager Augusta, started these fabulous gardens called the Kew Gardens, but Queen Charlotte really expanded them. And she loved botany and plants. And today the Kew Gardens in London is one of the most famous botanical gardens in the world, and she played a big part in that.
There were a lot of people interested in botany. What was it about botany in that time period? Because they were surrounded by nature. The cities had not really grown up to where they are today.
Well, there was also, as the exploration was going on around the world, they were discovering new plants, and the bird of paradise, a beautiful flower, is named after Queen Charlotte, or rather where she comes from, the Strelitzia reginae. It's a the bird of paradise. So, she was involved with, very interested in botany, and Kew Gardens is connected with her.
Now, for those of us who have seen the, the British series that PBS is airing called Victoria, one would believe that it was Prince Albert who brought the Christmas tree from Germany to England, because there's a big episode where he decorates the royal drawing room with Christmas trees, one of which hangs upside down from the ceiling. I did not know that was a tradition. That's very strange to me. but clearly that is not true, because she is credited with bringing the Christmas tree to Britain. Is that not right?
Absolutely, and it's a great story, and I don't want to tell everything because we want people to come to Adria's Museum.
You must tell everything. This is a radio show. You must.
But yes, because Charlotte was raised as a Lutheran, Martin Luther used to decorate the branches of the fir tree. And so when she became queen, she started to decorate the trees and went beyond just the branches to the entire tree. And so this was a story about, here we have Queen Charlotte bringing in children from the village for Christmas parties, decorating the trees, having big celebrations. And I believe, personally, that because she did this, the other aristocrats in London followed suit, as people would do, and the whole celebration of decorating your house for Christmas would have been launched by the Queen. Another contribution that she gave to the Queen, to the city of Charlotte, to the country, and to the world.
Wow. Of course, it will not be until Charles Dickens that we really began to celebrate Christmas the way we celebrate it today, with its intersection with commerce and the actual saying, Happy Christmas or Merry Christmas to each other. That wasn't done before that. Queen Charlotte was also a philanthropist. Was that unusual for people of royal stature at the time, anywhere in Europe?
I don't think it was unusual, and she was certainly involved with orphanages and hospitals, so she was doing that. One also point about their family, George and Charlotte, they had a very happy relationship together through their years together. They were they got on well. In fact, it was their court was considered to be rather not particularly an exciting court, because they were really homebodies, George and Charlotte. And of course, a bit later on, George, his mental illness became apparent.
Explain the concept of being in the court. We see this on television shows where people, the courtiers, are there amongst the king and queen. These were all royal people. Well, not royal people, but they were people of station. They were dukes and duchesses and other lords and ladies. Why were they there? Because they had nothing else to do? I don't mean that flippantly. Why do they hang around?
Well, they were the staff. I mean, they would have been the staff to the king and the queen.
These royal people, these duchess and dukes and duchesses, would be the staff to the royal family?
Well, they'd be attending.
They were in attendance.
I'm sorry,
go ahead. Yes, they were advisors, like we have cabinet secretaries and various officials throughout the government. These people had different titles, and they came from noble families, but they were close to the queen and to the king. They traveled the world, and they brought information back about what was going on in the British Empire. And so they were very active and very involved.
We have two statues of note in Charlotte of the Queen. One is not far from where we're sitting right now on College, I think it's College and Fifth.
College and Fifth.
Which is in front of the Wake Forest Adjunct School. It's the Queen in a very full skirt with a little dog, which she was famous for having at her feet. And the other one, of course, is the one that used to be at the entrance to the Charlotte Douglas Airport, which has been moved. They moved it for construction purposes. I don't think they're moving it back. And that is the one where it looks like she's being hit in the stomach by a basketball, because she's holding the crown in her hand and she's doubled over. And they say, airport people say, it's because she's being doubled back by a gust of wind from a jet engine. John emails, many people I have picked up at the airport have asked me with a snicker about the Queen Charlotte sculpture. When I explain she's facing into a strong wind, they say, no way, just look at her clothing. Please ask your guests for their interpretation. And the bottom of her skirts are going forward while she's going backward, but that would seem to be ergonomically correct, if that's the right word. What was the purpose of this sculpture? Does anybody know?
I think the initial intent of that sculpture was to give a symbol for Charlotte, and this is the 1990s, so this is the new airport, new Charlotte, a new banking city, and this was meant to be a symbol of the city and of our revolutionary heritage.
Okay.
I think it was just not particularly well received for the aesthetic.
I know that you have photographs, and you're not here, Dr. Myers, but you have photographs of both of these statues in your book. Do either of them really resemble her? Do they capture any of the features that, or were those features toned down, or did the sculptor even, were they even aware of her lineage?
Well, the sculpture, the one of her with her dogs that Bailey Graham Weathers, Dr. Weathers did, it seems to resemble her from what I can tell. The one at the airport, I don't know what they were thinking with that, so I can't really say. That statue has been really criticized around the world for its form and shape. But the other one, which is very elegant, Queen Charlotte Walks in Her Garden, I think does reflect parts of her personality and gives her a demeanor and a dignity that certainly she deserved. And I just want to mention again that for your listeners, you can't find the book on Amazon. Please come to our website, www.myerspublishing.com, and our book is Invisible Queen, and we capture a lot of the points that we've talked about on this wonderful show in terms of Queen Charlotte and who she was and her personality, her philanthropy, and as Dr. Dussek mentioned, she was supporting orphan girls. She supported a school for orphan girls for many years, and what I love about that story, it was called The Right School, is she helped them learn how to sew and embroider. And she brought them into the palaces and let them embroider curtains and bedspreads. And we would call that vocational education today. So she had insight into the fact that these orphan children had no one to take care of them.
Yeah.
And she found a way to help them make a living.
And Dr. Dussek,
so she had a lot of depth to her.
You mentioned, Dr. Dussek, that she and the King George III, had a happy marriage. And it was so happy that it was kind of boring around the palace because there was no shenanigans going on. She took care of him. He had mental illness, and it got progressively worse as he got older. And although he outlived her, she took care of him until his death. What was she contending with?
Well, they're not 100% sure what it was. It became apparent in about 1788, and then by 1811, we had to have a regency. Then the next king, George IV, was in line to become the king, and acted in place, and Queen Charlotte would sometimes accompany George IV on royal visits. But I think it was very distressing for Queen Charlotte what was happening to her husband, especially because even then I don't think they really knew what was going on, and even today we're not 100% sure what it was.
Very quickly, because we're only 30 seconds left, since you're with the Charlotte Museum of History, Adria, once the Revolutionary War hit and we issued the alleged Mecklenburg Declaration of Independence, why did we choose to keep the name Charlotte? Why didn't somebody say, let's change it?
I think maybe it had already become a symbol for us to rally around. Maybe people had already come to accept that this was our namesake, and rightly so. She was a worthy namesake.
Adria Focht is the president and CEO of the Charlotte Museum of History. Dr. Hugh Dussek is an instructor of history at CPCC, and he's from London, so, this is a thing. And Dr. Stephanie Myers is the author of the book we've been talking about, Invisible Queen, Mixed Ancestry Revealed, Queen Sophia Charlotte. Thank you all for the hour.